Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 33, recorded Monday, November 7th, 2011. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Ford, featuring voice-activated sync app link. Now you can control select smartphone apps with your voice so you keep your hands on the wheel and your eyes on the road. Check it out in the 2012 Ford Fiesta and at Ford.com/technology. And by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. And by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of The Social Hour in Petaluma, California. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, at a conference. I'm glad I get a break, Sarah, to do the show with you.
I'm glad you do, too. So it's funny, you just mentioned right before the show started, people think you're sort of a weird sight huddling in the corner. It doesn't look like you're huddling anywhere. It looks like you're dressed up, you got some glitter on.
It's kind of strange, I think, for people who are walking by, because I am hosting this event. And so I've been on stage sort of producing people throughout the entire show. You know, it's a nice event, lots of people in suits, a few hundred people. And then I'm just like, okay, I have to go run in a corner and do my podcast while there's a speaker on. So anyway, it makes for an interesting day. But I have always promised the Social Hour audience that it would be interesting in terms of where I would be. And it's never a dull moment, Sarah.
Well, before the show started, we were noticing in chat room people started to talk about brands on Google Plus, and that, of course, is something that many people have been waiting for a while, but Google Plus was not allowing any entity that was not an individual person who could verify their specific identity to actually join Google Plus without voiding, you know, terms and conditions. It sounds like they have now opened the floodgates to brands like Android and Coldplay and, well, it could be any brand, really.
Yeah, it appears as though they are doing a global rollout today of Google Plus brand pages. So for all those organizations and companies who've wanted to go in and create their own brand, they are now allowing you to do this. However, I will say, Sarah, that I did go in to try to create a branded page, and it said I was not able to do that right away. So there, as you've noticed, there's limited information about the technicality surrounding creating your own brand pages. It appears, like you said, there are some brands that have created Google Plus brand pages, but it's not clear if it's available for everyone or the limitations.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I love this idea. It's just, it's sort of strange if they have rolled out with a specific number of partnerships. We're actually looking at a video that Google put together to show how to search for Google Plus brands in Google Search, which makes a lot of sense. Obviously, there might be brands that, you know, you're familiar with. It kind of works. I guess this sounds to me a lot like Facebook pages. Which is, you know, that's when you search somebody in Facebook. Amber, I know you and I have both experimented with both profiles and pages. So, you know, you might see a couple of different entries. But for brands in general, you just wouldn't have a profile at all because you're not a person, you're a brand. So I think this makes a lot of sense for Google Plus. I mean, it's certainly going to drive engagement for any brands that are interested in being part of the service that were locked out before. I just wonder how much this may contribute to the spam issue that I feel Google Plus is already having.
Yeah, I know. I mean, there are so many users signing up for Google Plus on a weekly basis, and I totally get the spam issue. I have the same thing with my own account, you know. I think it could be an increasing problem with Google, so maybe that's why they'll hopefully slowly roll this out as an option. Let's just hope they don't make the same mistake that Facebook made when they introduced pages. Remember how confusing it was if you were an individual account owner, how you had to go and open a page, and then if you wanted to go back. I mean, it was just a mess. So I really hope the process is easier for organizations to create their own brand page than it was when Facebook first introduced similar functionality.
Well, you know, and Facebook has also gone back on the idea that if you are a personal brand, a page is the right thing for you. I mean, at one point that made sense because if you wanted to amass, you know, a bunch of friends, you had a limit on your profile, and so you had to go page. It wasn't really the best way to do it, but it was kind of our only option. And now with the subscription model that they have on individual profiles, I mean, I folded my page completely. I don't even have one anymore. I never really liked the idea because it made me feel like I was calling myself a brand, and I don't really consider myself that. But it'd be interesting to see how Google Plus deals with maybe people who are who are running several accounts. I mean, you can do that on Twitter, of course. There's really no limit. It's just, it's messy. It's like they're sort of paving the way as we go along. We'll just have to see how they approach things.
I guess the nice thing for Google is that they are able to kind of watch some of the mistakes that other companies like Facebook have made and hopefully learn from those mistakes. So we'll see what happens. Sarah, in other Google news, if you are an avid Google user like I am and you love Gmail and use Google Calendar, you'll be happy to know that Google Calendar has rolled out a new feature called Suggested Times in Google Calendar. So you know how what a pain it is when you're trying to schedule meetings with someone and you don't know when they're available? What this feature will do is between Gmail users, it will actually tell you times where the other person could potentially be available. So it eliminates those 20 back and forth email messages that often go on when you're trying to find a suitable time, a block where you can meet.
So, all right. So I am looking at my Google Calendar now. So let's say that I start an entry called The Social Hour with Amber, and you know, you say 11 a.m. Google Calendar is pretty good about reading that sort of stuff. I could enter in all of the regular calendar items about what, you know, where it might be or, you know, what the dial-in number is. But then let's say that I add Amber. Now, this is actually where Suggested Times comes in. So if you and I were actually connected on Google Calendar, which we aren't, not for any reason, we just don't really do a lot of stuff through Google Calendar, you and I. But if we are, if I had shared my personal calendar with you or, you know, I had opened it up publicly, the Suggested Times area would then allow me to see if you had certain times blocked out, which is awesome. That makes a lot of sense.
It makes a lot of sense. I share calendars with a few people that I work with on a regular basis, and just really handy to have this feature because I just, like I said, I hate when those emails go back and forth. Does this time work? Does this time work? And you, before you know it, you have a dozen emails, and you really haven't been able to nail down a final time. So just a neat little tweak that Google has made within the calendar tool.
Makes perfect sense. Google has made so many tweaks lately. Last week, Google Docs changed. Google Calendar pretty much everything got an upgrade or an update if you don't actually like the way Gmail looks now, which I do not. I know people say, oh, you just add a theme, you know, or you change the background color, but I kind of like to stick with defaults with my Google products. I don't know why. I don't have a good reason for that. So I just get all crotchety whenever they change anything because I want it to always look the same.
I know. It's hard when you spend so much time in Gmail to go in and then it has changed. I don't mind the changes that much. I mean, I don't think they're that offensive. I just haven't really, I've been adding some themes and I haven't found a great theme yet that I love for a background image. But I'm getting used to the changes. Fortunately, it wasn't too dramatic. But yeah, I hear you, Sarah. I get sick of people overhauling things in a major way.
Yeah, especially when you think, well, it looks different, and it's always good to be evolving, but what was the reason that you took away all the color? Like, why does my spam button not actually show red anymore? It's hard to see. All right, moving on to some Facebook news. Facebook, speaking of pages, there's a Facebook page that was started sometime before November 5th, which ended up being some sort of a national bank transfer day. Anybody who's familiar with Occupy Wall Street, and I should say that this particular movement that was started by an individual is not affiliated with Occupy anything, but the two share a lot of commonalities as far as thinking goes. Bank Transfer Day was a Facebook page created to kind of rally folks behind leaving large banks in favor for smaller banks or credit unions, you know, kind of more, less, you know, being led around by the man, some people might say, and more take control of your money and don't let people control it for you. Mashable wrote an article on the day itself, and at that point, about 80,000 people had had liked the page, which is, you can say, well, you know, did 80,000 people really change banks that day? Maybe not, but definitely showed their support. The number's about 86,000 at this point. So it just goes to show that this Facebook page, even though the day has come and gone, it's still gaining momentum.
Yeah, I've just I thought this article was kind of interesting because I was curious if sites like this or pages like this would kind of propel change out there. So if all of a sudden everybody decides that, hey, you know, we don't want to shop at Walmart anymore, or we don't want to go to a certain pizza place or whatever it might be, or bank at a certain place, are companies at risk of all of a sudden people bonding together and working to find an alternative idea as far as a different place to do business? And I think this could be kind of a sign of things to come, and could continue to potentially hurt some businesses out there. Not that it's a bad thing, but you see how quickly these groups get so big.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally unrelated to this particular Facebook movement, I had posted, and I think we talked about it on the show at least briefly, that I was considering leaving my bank, which happens to be Bank of America, my main bank, in support for something better. I knew credit unions were an option, but I didn't necessarily have something specific in mind, and I just wanted to pull the hive mind. And I mean, it was by far, I got more responses and more engagement just asking a relatively simple question. Lots of advice, sort of heated debate just in my Google Plus comments. So it's definitely a hot topic for people.
For sure.
It's really, and it's interesting to see if, you know, how much of this is just talk where we all say, gosh, you know, I really hate my bank too. Banks suck,
I
don't
know.
They?
It's,
and
it's
how much leads to change.
Actually take action. That's one of the reasons I included it. I remember you talking about the banking question, and you saw how many people wanted to or had opinions and wanted to respond. And I think it's similar in maybe the telco industry, you know, big, large telecommunications companies. Many people either love or hate who they're working with, most often hate. So a lot of opinions about these, and it's interesting to see these big groups kind of get together.
Absolutely. There's also the Mashable article that talked about Bank Transfer Day also mentioned the website moveyourmoneyproject.org, which I've taken a look at. I've taken a look at already because it had been suggested to me via my Google Plus thread. But Mashable said that Arianna Huffington was the one that created this, which is, I did not realize that. And when you click through the site, at least unless it's really buried, there's no mention of her anywhere, you know, in the about section. So I'm not sure where you find that out, if that's something that's known and it's just, sort of like an unspoken thing. I have no idea. But it is actually a pretty good resource to figure out what your options are based on where you live and what you're interested in doing and what your money situation is. We're not advocating, hey, we don't know. You're the only person who should decide what to do with your money. It is just interesting to see how these things start to gain momentum and tools are built. And, you know, they can actually help people.
Yeah, speaking of tools and helping people, Sarah, Twitter has rolled out a section on their site called stories.twitter.com, and this is really fun. I think it's especially interesting for people who think that Twitter is a useless tool and you want to see how it's actually helped people in the real world. Essentially, what it is a whole bunch of stories about how, you know, one tweet has really changed someone's lives. If you go and scroll down the homepage, you see everything from an individual talking about how Twitter saved his mom's bookstore, Roger Ebert gained a new voice after losing his ability to speak, and all of these really compelling Twitter stories that we've heard about before, but it's nice to see this central database of all of them in one place.
Absolutely. One of the great examples, we're seeing some video of it right now, is a story about how Twitter user, his mom runs a bookstore up in Portland, and they were just having a really bad holiday season, and they were afraid they'd have to shut down, and he kind of said, I mean, it wasn't that he was joking, but not necessarily looking to save his mom's bookstore. Hey, if somebody goes into my mom's bookstore, I'll buy you a burrito when I'm in town, type of a thing. And it was the sort of thing that it just resonated with people, gained momentum. And it's a really nicely put together video. I mean, obviously Twitter has hired some sort of a, you know, like a production team or something, because this stuff is really, it looks really nice. And you get kind of a warm, fuzzy story about how the communication tool that is Twitter helped saved Aaron's mom's bookstore. And she goes on to say that, you know, pretty much since they got an influx of customers, they've been okay since. You know, they're on the up and up. I love this. At the same time, I guess, Amber, there's a little bit of a... When I say warm and fuzzy, I certainly don't think that's a bad thing. I think it's a great thing. But at the same time, I think, wow, you know, that's like right at the top of their stories. There's so much that has gone on in the world that I guess is, I don't know, more compelling or more dramatic or more moving. You know, Arab Spring comes to mind.
Sure.
So, yeah, yeah, I'm not sure how they choose the stories that they decide to feature, I guess.
But I would assume that maybe, I don't know if this is their approach, but because the stories are kind of warm and fuzzy, you're exactly right. Maybe it is attracting that audience that isn't entirely comfortable with Twitter, and it makes them feel as though this could be something that could be useful to them. Because if you see some of the stories there, I mean, like you said, they're very, you know, they're very touching stories, but they're a little bit soft, right? Perhaps they're trying to get that those non-users to just feel comfortable as though it is such a, you know, a lovely place. And then all of a sudden, those people are going to be totally shocked when they realize it can be, Twitter can be crass and violent and right. Who knows, a little bit of everything at times, right?
Very true. Very true. It is definitely worth checking out, though. Again, that URL is stories.twitter.com. They've done a very good job putting it together, and there really are, extremely interesting stories. Roger Ebert's story, I mean, you know, I say compelling. I would never suggest that his story is not compelling. It's actually one of the most compelling.
It is,
and he's a real advocate of how the internet has allowed him to have a voice that he can't have physically, but just never even had before. He's definitely one of Twitter's good success stories. Definitely check it out. So we've got quite a bit of news from Google opening up to brands, bank riots on Facebook. No, I'm just kidding. And then, of course, Twitter starting to tell stories.
Twitter love, Sarah. Twitter love. That's all we have to call it.
A lot of Twitter love. Quick reminder that we record the Social Hour on Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. If you're not watching us live, you should tune in sometime because we got the chat room going. People are asking us questions and having little conversations, and it's fun to follow along and get feedback from you in real time. But if you can't watch us live, you can always watch all of our shows on demand at any time, any way you want. twit.tv/TSH is our show website. That's where you get all of our back episodes. Last week, we talked to Kevin Rose. It was about 2 days or so before Oink actually launched to the public. There was a little bit of a delay, so at the time we thought, well, any minute now. And it's an interesting interview to watch because it was before he knew that it was going to be a big deal. They had a pretty successful launch last week. A lot of interest.
Yeah.
A lot of buzz. And, you know, shows like that. You can watch embedded videos straight from any of our show pages. You can download a variety of different video types. Obviously, audio feed as well. So if you're the kind of person who really wants to be part of the show but doesn't necessarily have an hour to watch anything, you can just listen. You might miss a few visual cues, but we try to explain everything we're talking about for you audio listeners. And, of course, the best way of all is just to subscribe. Subscribe to a feed of our show, and that way you just get a show delivered once a week, and you don't even have to go anywhere. You can just watch it whenever you have time. It's kind of like how I watch everything on my Hulu queue. I don't think about it. Just when there's a new show, I watch a show. Good stuff. All right, Amber, before we get to some of our web and app spotlights of the week, we should take a moment to thank Ford. They're our first sponsor of the show. The deal with Ford is like the techiest car company in the world. Well, this episode particularly is brought to us by voice-activated Sync App Link, which allows you to select apps from your smartphone with voice commands. It's very robot stuff. So you can keep your hands on the wheel. You don't have to take your eyes off the road. It's very safe, but you have a lot of stuff at your fingertips. Like you can voice control Pandora in your car. You can say, play my dubstep station, for example. You can have your tweets read to you with an app called OpenBeak. A simple voice command opens that up. You can have your at replies read to you. So maybe you tweeted something right before you got into the car and now you're on this long road trip and you just know that those at replies are piling up, or you hope that they are anyway. That sort of stuff. Really, really, really... it's very helpful. Ford Sync App Link, built on API platform, so Ford can continue to work with developers, which is awesome in the app community. So you can just imagine all of the apps that people are going to come up with that makes driving your car a really fun experience. I mean, that's the one thing about driving that I miss is being so connected. Speaking of Ford, we definitely want to take this moment to let you know about upcoming barbecue on Sunday, November 3rd and Sunday, December 4th. TWiT is hosting Sunday barbecues. They both start.
Oh, Sarah, yes? Quick question. November, you said November 3rd. Do you mean
13th? I'm sorry.
Okay.
November
13th. Just want to make sure.
Yes. No, thank you. November 13th, not the 3rd, because that already happened. November 13th and December 4th. Both of them start at 1:30 p.m. Pacific time. You can meet and eat and check out some Ford models. We're going to have the street closed off. Leah will probably be wearing like a fancy costume of some kind. You can watch us record TWiT in studio, because that's what we do on Sundays anyway. If you want to join, go to twit.tv because you have to request tickets. And we do have a limited number. The fire marshal will shut us down. It should be a really fun time. So please, if you think you can, if you can join us, go to twit.tv, request the tickets. We would love to see you. And thanks to Ford for sponsoring the TWiT Sunday barbecues. I cannot wait.
What an awesome idea.
I know, to see what they're, it's going to be like a block party out here. It's awesome. I don't even work on Sunday, and I'm coming up because I don't want to miss it.
That'll be fun.
Very fun.
All right.
Moving on to Amber, I love this site so much.
I know. Actually, you know what? There's a few things in our spotlight today. I have to say they're all pretty awesome. The awesome factor is quite high day, Sarah. First up, supercut.org. It was co-founded by Andy Bio, who does Waxy Links, and we're both a fan of that site. Now, this is kind of interesting. They say it's a fast-paced montage of short video clips that obsessively isolate a single element from its source. To put that in layman's terms, what that means is, let's say, take a show like The Wire, and someone has gone on to Supercut, and they've actually created a montage of every time someone gets murdered in The Wire. Not all of these video snippets are safe for work. However, most of them are very entertaining.
So I'm looking at supercut.org right now. When I first looked at it, you know, it's a nice looking site. And I go, oh, Andy Bio, he's awesome. So you know that he's a creative guy and he puts together cool stuff. But I thought, okay, Supercut, and they explain what it is. But you really don't get the gist of it until you actually click on one of these links. I'm going to pick the Muppet Show because we were talking about Kermit and Miss Piggy having a Google Hangout pretty soon. So let's just see. Okay, so
it's the Muppet Show with our very special guest star, Miss Juliet Prowse, Connie Stevens, and from Sesame Street, Ernie and Bert, Joel Gray, Ruth Buzzard.
Okay, I got it. So these are all of the guests that the Muppet Show ever had, ever.
Harvey Korman, Lena Hart, Peter Ustinov, Bruce Forsyth, Sandy Duncan, Candace Bergen, Avery Schreiber, Ben Marie.
So you get the idea. We don't have to play all of this. I love how some of the episodes, you can tell that they were still experimenting with their camera zooms.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Some of them start out, you know, kind of high. It seems like they're in a groove now where they do like a quick zoom in. So this is fascinating. Okay, I'm gonna spare you all, even though I know we all love Kermit. We don't have to watch almost 3 minutes of that.
Oh come on, Sarah, it's good.
I love this, but I'm like, what? But why?
But who does these?
But why?
Well, I don't know if you... I didn't watch this, but there's one on the homepage right now being featured from the X-Files, and it's every shot of Mulder's wristwatch. So every time Mulder's wristwatch comes into scene, then someone has edited together a montage. So I don't know. I don't know why, Sarah. I can't explain it, but I love it too.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't get it. Wow. 6 months, 12 watches. 1,264 screenshots. It's just one of those things. Oh, so this is a whole different kind of a thing. Wow. So it's like a fun, hey, let's be creative in a particular way. You know, you almost constrain yourself in order to make the project very specific, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I think people, they get very... very obsessed with the tiny little details and put together something that maybe there was never a home for this before. You know, you'd see things like this on YouTube splattered all over the place, but now there is a home on Supercut for people to take things like this and create their own video creations. I won't be doing one, Sarah, but I'll be watching.
I will not either, because this looks like. As somebody said, Don't Blink in Chat says, we have too much time on our hands. This seems like something that would, whether or not you have time, it is time consuming. I will say, though, that if you go to supercut.org, they do have featured videos on the homepage, but if you go to the View All tab, which is just one of the tabs on in the upper left-hand corner, you can check out a variety of videos. There's the All category. You can search via film or television or video games. Chad, I've got it up on my computer now. But one of the best ones, and even if you're a Beverly Hills 90210 hater, well, actually, if you're a Beverly Hills 90210 hater, you'll really hate this video. But if you're not, and it's what you know, one of the best shows of my youth, absolutely. they have a montage where every utterance of the word Christmas is put together in a handy little like 2.5 minute segment, and they say Christmas a lot. I didn't remember that really from the show series.
So funny,
but yeah, there's like hundreds and hundreds of utterances of the word Christmas. That was fun. I actually put that on G Plus this morning.
So basically, do not show this to anyone who thinks the internet is a total waste of time, because you will just completely verify their sentiments.
Exactly. Yeah. It's I love stuff like this because I love weird projects that people obviously put a lot of time into, even if they're pointless. But yes, I can see a lot of people just being like, this is an OCD site. I don't know what we get out of this. So that's our web spotlight, supercut.org. Definitely worth a few laughs, even if you're never going to make one of your own. Also, we have an app spotlight. Now, this is actually something that we wanted to talk about last week, but because we had Kevin Rose from Oink on the show, we didn't have time to get to, but it's definitely worth talking about. This is an iOS app called Batch, although I believe they're going to have an Android version soon. They always say that. You know, I know all you Android
coming
people
soon.
Say, yeah, we've heard that one before. But the idea with Batch is that, okay, so we all have however many pictures on our camera phone rolls. And many of those pictures, you know, with Instagram now, it's like you take the picture that's a mediocre picture, you run it through a couple of filters, you upload it to Instagram, you give it some sort of a title, and then maybe there's a little bit of comment thread type thing. Then there's a little bit of a backlash about that because some people think, you know, you took a picture with your camera phone, the camera phone isn't even that bad to begin with, and why do you have all these stupid filters? And it sort of takes away some authenticity from whatever you were doing at that moment. And then you've got apps like the ill-fated color app. We had interviewed Color's Peter Pham on one of our first episodes of The Social Hour, which didn't really go anywhere, even though the premise where Amber and me and Ayaz and Chad are all together at a bar and are taking pictures and adding to this sort of collective picture pool, good idea, didn't really catch on. So this app called Batch is attempting to sort of be the best of both worlds. What you have to do is hook up via, I know it's Facebook. I've hooked up with my Facebook friends, may have a Twitter link as well. Some people get weird out about that. So if you're one of these people who doesn't like to enter your Facebook Connect in order to get started with Batch, it might not be the app for you. But the reason that it's so helpful is that all of a sudden now, without me doing anything, without me having to really add anybody on Batch, I've got a variety of friends who are sharing batches of photos with me. Okay, so for example, let's go to a batch where, okay, so Leo Laporte is at, or was at, PubCon Las Vegas 2011. Okay, I see a variety of pictures in here. So let's say I go and click into this first picture. Okay, so this is, looks like something at, like, I don't know, an airport, some sort of security line. Okay, he's getting out of the cab here. I have no people sleeping on the floor here type of a thing. and so on. So the idea is that you take all these pictures, and collectively in a batch, they're kind of cool because you can sort of see how, let's say, a weekend in Vegas progressed, or somebody's birthday, or maybe you're at a conference, that type of a thing. But you don't necessarily want to put all of those pictures on Flickr or on Instagram, and you don't really want to delete them from your phone, but they do no good without sharing them. That's where batches come in handy. If you've got a great batch, you know, Justine Ezerick is a heavy user of Batch. She's got all sorts of great batches. At some point, if she's like, okay, you know, I really like this Chilean batch that I put together. And you can batch anything. They don't all have to be, you know, within one weekend. You can just give something a category. And by the way, if somebody likes the photo or has a comment on the photo, you can comment on individual photos. But Justine could also send this entire batch to all the people who follow her on Facebook, for example. So it's not, you think, well, is batch just another place to put all my photos? It can be. And if you have enough of a social network within Batch, you don't really have to leave it. But if you've got 20 photos from, you know, somebody, you know, your friend's kid's first birthday party, and you want to share with, you know, some of your relatives, and they're on Facebook, then there's a really easy export option to just export the entire batch. I love it. I think
very
it's great.
Cool. Yeah. And you know what? I've seen a lot of people talking about that on Twitter. It was funny. You were going to mention it last week, and then the past few days, I can see how much more popular it's getting and how many people are starting to use it. So it seems to be trending upwards.
Yes, absolutely. Batch has gotten a lot of attention. My only... It's not a gripe at all. I can't really find anything wrong with the app, but it's just... We are in a really flooded app market, you know, whether it's about rating things, some sort of geolocation game, or group photo sharing. I mean,
filtering photos.
Yeah, you know, and the filtering photos. I mean, Batch doesn't even give you an option to filter, you know, to add filters to photos. Wink does. They're somewhat limited, but I mean, there's definitely an emphasis on that. It's just, I know in my heart that all of these services just can't survive forever because we don't have that much attention spans. So, you know, some of them will be gobbled up by the Googles or the Facebooks, you know, will incorporate stuff like this into their big offerings. But I don't know. It's cool now. So I thought you guys should know about it.
All right. So we have another app for you, but this one has a bit of a different spin. There are lots of people out there right now who are sporting mustaches to support Movember. This is a charitable cause that takes place for the entire month, and it is to support mental health, particularly prostate cancer, and help to fight off that disease. This app is called Picamo, and it's a way you can give anyone a mustache, and you can share that mustache, that picture, with any of your friends through social networking sites. So just, again, a fun way to either change your Twitter profile or just show your support for Movember.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is, you know, as funny as Movember seems, where it's like, grow out a mustache and make it look silly. I mean, it is... for a good cause. This is actually a charity thing that just happens to be sort of a fun, silly game that people can play through the month of November. Picamo, at first I said, well, you know, I think it's like 99 cents in the US App Store, although they have a UK version as well. And it was built by, I think it's a PR, the UK branch of a PR firm, a well-known one that name is escaping me right now. But the fact that money is going towards a good cause makes it, see, it's like, you know, it's a dollar. I mean, we can all afford to donate a dollar to something like this. So I actually like it. I mean, it's silly. It's worth a couple of funny mustache pictures because, Amber, I don't know about you, but I'm probably not going to have a great handlebar hairy mustache by the end of November. I need a little bit more time than that.
And a few more drugs too.
Yeah, I actually need. It's a big commitment. I'm not sure that's what I'm going to do in the month of November. It's also worth mentioning since we are talking about Movember. Many of you probably are like, "What is that?" Movember actually has its own app. If you go to Movember.com, it actually is. A really nice entry into why Movember got created, what is the story behind it, and if you're actually someone who's trying to raise, you know, let's say you're trying to raise $1,500, you know, I'm just throwing that number out there. A lot of people would have a hard time raising that kind of money from their social circle alone. But let's say you've got 10 guys or girls, whatever, who are going to band together and do the mustaches. Sometimes people do beards, that sort of thing. Well, that might make it a lot easier because it's a group goal and it's just easier for everybody to raise a little bit of money. And Movember has put out an, iOS app. And I noticed in their comments that a lot of Android people are like, now that's just insulting because we want to participate and we want to use an app that's helpful for us, but you just don't supply us with one. So it's iPhone only for now, or iOS rather. And the idea is I haven't actually created a Movember user account, so you're just looking at my home screen, but that you log in and you can track who's donated. You can easily help solicit donations through the app. Get a sense of where everybody is going towards their goals, where the money's coming from, for example. So it's really helpful. I mean, as much as this is sort of on the surface a fun little, hey, let's do this for November type of a thing, some people do take it quite seriously, and they even give you sort of a style guide if you're actually going to go all out and get the best mustache by November 30th.
Very cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Good stuff. So thanks, Movember, and thanks to Picomo also for helping spread the word and get some money together by making a fun little app for us mustache challenged. All right, before we get to some viewer feedback, let's take a moment to thank Audible.com. They're our second sponsor of The Social Hour today. You know, we talked about Audible a lot in the past. Did you know? I was always really impressed with the number 75,000 titles. That's so much. I mean, think of all the audiobooks that are in there. They're up to over 100,000 now. 100,000 titles.
Wow.
So you have got so many options because books, they just keep getting written. And as they keep getting written, they keep becoming audiobooks. Audible is just the best way to find any book that you would like to be read to you rather than reading it. Mindy Kaling, who's a regular on The Office, she's so funny. She's got a new book out. I saw her on The Daily Show. It's called, Chad, if you scroll down just a tiny bit more.
Oh, I saw her as well.
It's called, Is Everyone Hanging Out Without Me? And Other Concerns. And her character on The Office is, you know, really, she's kind of paranoid and, you know, has issues with other people. She's a very funny actress. And I love the idea that she's narrating her own book. Looks like she has somebody named Michael Schur is maybe providing some of the male voices in the book. But this is the sort of thing where I would love to listen to this when I'm commuting or when I'm at the gym, you know, and I want something lighthearted that's you know read by somebody that I respect in the comedic space. So that's just a good example of the new and notable section. Of course, Audible has its bestseller section. Steve Jobs is probably going to be in that top spot for the foreseeable future. You can just go ahead and search if you already know the book that you want to hear, before you even get to Audible. And if you're one of those people like me who really likes the idea of the author reading their own book, Audible will also give you that category. So you can just see what your options are as far as authors that you either may already know and love or not know that well who are reading their own books. If you want kind of that authentic experience of really being at a book reading. So here's what you do. audiblepodcast.com/socialhour is your special URL. The reason it's special is because you get a book for free. If you want Mindy's book, you go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour right now. Put in a little information. It's very easy. Just takes a moment, and you can download a free audiobook. So you can get started. You can see, okay, so this is how Audible works. This is where I would like to be when I'm listening to an audiobook, before you go to bed, or maybe you just have, you know, a couple hours on a Sunday type of a thing. Audible is really great. It's a fun way to read. You'll end up reading more than you read now, I guarantee you, because we just don't always have time to do this. But a lot of times we can multitask, you know, cook dinner and listen to our audiobooks at the same time. So thanks so much to Audible for sponsoring us. And again, audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. Get that free audiobook. Do it now.
That's a good one. And she was hilarious on The Daily Show, and I'm sure she has a very funny read. She was a blast.
Yeah.
All right. So, of course, we love getting your feedback. I'm going to read our first email. I'm the social media manager for Sony Music Entertainment Canada. With an artist coming to town, we created a Twitter hashtag to open up a channel for fans to gather around a few days before the show. We try to get that artist to participate as well before the show. During the show, we asked fans to video a certain song with their smartphone, then upload the finished product to the YouTube page, to their YouTube pages. We then take those videos, mash them up, and insert sound from the board and release it on YouTube about a week after the show. The result is a very cool fan-generated video from the perspective of the fans. There's a little more to it than that. We have a Twitter contest on the side during the event, but that is the gist. You can see an example of one we did with Lizzie earlier this year, and this is from Boner K. Bulger, social media guy at Sony Music Canada. So thanks for sharing that. It's really fun to see how other people are using social media, and this is a perfect mashup of a bunch of different tools.
I love this too because the big labels often get, you know, they give out the impression that they're not real cool with streaming a music show, for example, and putting up on YouTube. I like the idea that the people behind a Sony's social media say, okay, well, we know people are going to go to the concert and they're going to record video. So why not get them to participate in something that's a little bit more official, you know, that the artist might also participate in. You get a conversation going on Twitter, and then you can be the one saying, oh, hey, you know, that's my camera. That's my shot. I took that shot. I remember doing that type of a thing. And then they put the composited video on an official YouTube account up online. We have more of a chance of more people seeing it, and it actually looks really professional. They use the original audio, so it's not as if you're hearing a bunch of different cuts of audio. And I'm not familiar with Lizzie. I don't know if she's a Canadian artist. Amber, do you know her? Because
I'm
she has
sure.
a beautiful voice, but I'm new to her.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't even recognize the name, so I'll have to look her up and see what she's doing. So I'm sure she's fairly well known, especially if she has that many fans on me.
Exactly. So that's good. It's good to know. Sony Music, kudos to you for thinking outside the box. And thanks to Mr. Bulger, the social media guy, for letting us know what cool stuff they're up to.
He's the coolest gig ever, I have to say, Sarah. That would be a fun job.
Seriously. Next question from Scott Z. Well, next email, rather. Hey, guys. I recently switched from Android to the iPhone 4S, partly because I was moved by Steve's passing, but also Siri and the camera. By the way, I had mentioned, just somewhat briefly on TNT, somewhat shortly after Steve Jobs died and the 4S came out, that I wondered how many people might have gotten the 4S more quickly or decided to wait in line because of just the timeliness of everything. And there were some people who said, absolutely not. You know, nobody would do that. That's crazy to even suggest such a thing. It was sort of weird. It was a question. I wasn't saying that that's actually why people were buying the 4S. But just goes to show that Scott Z was one of those people that I was wondering about. So, Scott, thanks for being honest. He says also Siri and the camera were big factors. I've enjoyed seeing my friends' profile pics change when they call me on Android, especially when we haven't talked in a while. The iPhone Facebook app does this, but it only finds about half my friends. I'm using Gmail. My contacts are very organized, with phone and email merged neatly. I did find a workaround by cutting and pasting my important contacts, Facebook profile web addresses, into the Gmail contact profile and resyncing the contacts in the Facebook app. Ugh, this sounds like a nightmare. But this is very time-consuming, as I have about 600 friends. I'm techie, but I'm not finding the iPhone as easy for social integration as my Droid phones. It also doesn't allow assigning a Twitter ID to a contact. So I have never actually owned an Android phone, but I have heard this from my Android phone-wielding friends, is that the iPhone does not sync as well with the social networks, like Scott was talking about. For example, when your friend rings you up, you see their Facebook profile, and let's say that they just changed it. It's a different Facebook profile than it was last week. I don't have that much to compare it to. I would assume that with Google Contacts, they probably just will work better on an Android phone in general, but that doesn't really account for why the Facebook app would work better on the Android platform than the iOS platform. Amber, have you heard anything like this?
No, I haven't. And I have to say that, you know, I was a BlackBerry user for a really long time, and I've started to use my iPhone as more of my primary device now. So it's been uphill for me in the sense of a social media integration on the BlackBerry is just absolutely horrible. I feel like I've already gone a step up, but that's really interesting to know. Maybe people can let us know if they've had better experiences with the with Android phones in terms of social integration. Let us know what you guys are doing and if you've had a similar experience to Scott.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that is as much time as we have for viewer feedback in this episode, but thank you so much to everybody who's always contributing. Many, many emails, not that many voicemails lately, so I'm going to remind you that our voicemail is 2626-SOCIAL. That's our Google voice number, so you know, you just type out the numbers, actually. Leave us a voicemail. Try to keep it to 30 seconds or less. Question, comment, really anything. We just want to hear from you. You can always upload videos as well. We love seeing your face. Yeah, it's more of an interactive type thing. That 30-second rule applies here as well. You just upload it anywhere, YouTube, Vimeo, or the like. Send us the link so we don't have to download any attachments. Of course, email is always welcome. TheSocialHour@twit.tv is our email address. TSH goes there too. We tried to make sure it was easy enough for everybody. But thanks all for all of the feedback that we're always receiving. And keep it coming because we love to feature you. Really quickly, before we get to Amber's Radar Fad, we won't spend too much time on this because I know that most of you are already Netflix lovers. But for the few of you who aren't, or for the few of you who still know somebody who needs to be convinced, Netflix is absolutely the best way to watch instant streaming movies, TV shows, TV series to your iPad, to your Apple TV, through your Roku box, your Nintendo Wii, your Xbox 360. The list goes on. You can watch Netflix movies anytime, any place. You can go nuts. And if you use the code netflix.com/twit, you can get a 30-day free trial. So if you already use Netflix, hopefully you got those 30 days at some point way back when you signed up. And thank you for using our code. But if you know somebody who hasn't yet, you know, maybe you know somebody who needs to get all caught up on Breaking Bad, or, you know, likes a lot of comedies, so many comedies in the instant streaming queue, or wants to watch The Vampire Diaries. Actually, that's something that I've never gotten into, but I keep hearing that it's pretty good. Maybe I'll try it. Vampire Diaries, season 1 and 2. Get all caught up. Walking Dead. The list goes on. Netflix.com/twit. Tell a friend. Have them sign up. Get their 30 days free. And there's no limit on what you can watch in 30 days, by the way. So you can just go absolutely hog wild and get caught up on pretty much every series there is. And even ones that have been canceled. So thanks again to Netflix. Again, that's Netflix.com/twit. And now it's time for Amber's Rad or Fad.
All right. Rad or Fad. So after many minutes of searching the internet far and wide for this week's Rad or Fad segment, I came across a service called Blether. What Blether does is it allows you to have private Twitter conversations with people, obviously on Twitter, where you can essentially use Twitter as a platform, but using Blether as the kind of the go-between, you're able to have totally private conversations with groups of people within that environment. If you check out the Blether site, it is really well designed, really simple. Once you start using the tool, you use an exclamation mark and then B at the beginning of a message you would put out on Twitter to make sure that that is private. And then the conversation with other people would be within its own little, almost like a little chat room.
So Blether, as Amber described, you have a couple options. You can either use the syntax. It's bang B. Bang is an exclamation point B. Or you can actually go to blether.co's website. I actually tried it out this morning and I have a bit of a bone to pick. So here is actually the message that I sent out to Tom Merritt, Ayaz Akhtar, and Jason Howell. It was sort of a cheeky little question. Hey, did we win some sort of tech podcast award? Because we actually did. We won Best Tech Podcast of the Podcast Awards over the weekend, which we were very excited about. But here's what happened. So this was me attempting to start a private chat, but it had to have been that first sort of public, let's have a private chat type of a situation. Okay. What happened is, and I wasn't quite sure how that they would get pinged. Well, they were individually pinged on Twitter. So I sent out three tweets in succession saying, hey, join me in this conversation. Hey, join me in this conversation. Now, it's not that big of a deal internally. I know that they figure I was testing out a service type of a thing. For anybody who follows, let's say all four of us, it just looks like a bunch of spam. You know, it's kind of a weird thing to see in your timeline. Now, Tom was nice enough to actually sign up for Blether based on my sort of cold tweet. So what you see is over on the right-hand side here, my question, did we win some sort of tech podcast award? The settings button probably isn't supposed to be hovering over the question here. And Ace Detect, who's Tom on Twitter, says, yes, we did. And then I said, sorry, trying out this new service, super annoying. Now, I think the service is actually, the idea is pretty cool. It's something that I would think Twitter would be internally testing or interested in maybe acquiring a company like this to give people these tools, perhaps, down the road. But I didn't like the approach because it wasn't explicit enough on how it was going to contact the people that I wanted to be in my private chat. Once they're in the private chat, you're no longer sending anything, you know, publicly via Twitter. But those initial first few public tweets, I felt were kind of, yeah, I don't know. They annoyed me a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm going to put it in the category of fad right now. I mean, I think it needs some work. I think it's an interesting idea, but I'm not sure if they have all the mechanics worked out. I also worry a little bit about trying to enable private conversations. What if you forget, or what if you don't do it right? Or I don't know, if you really want to have a truly private conversation, you know, maybe you have to pick up the phone. I don't know.
Right.
I'm not sure if Twitter's the place that I'm going to decide that I want to start sharing really private things and have just this isolated chat room. So to me, Twitter's always worked best as a public tool, and maybe if they make some changes, it could have potential. But right now, I think it's sort of in the fad category.
I think so, too. There have been people who have been begging for Twitter to open up DMs, as in direct messages, to group chats rather than just a one-on-one, which is, you know, Amber and I can't invite anybody into a DM conversation the two of us are having. It's a two-person conversation, two-account conversation. Obviously, something like Blether is attempting to give that functionality where Twitter has denied it in the past. But then I worry a lot of these sites, especially back in the Twitter's infancy, there were really neat third-party apps that were built that Twitter ended up killing because they would introduce that own their own functionality that would be more integrated or even better. So if I'm having a conversation with, you know, my colleagues on TNT here on Blether, and it's not actually associated with Twitter, what happens when Blether goes away one day? You know, is that conversation logged anywhere? Well, it's not really on Twitter anymore. You know, I use Twitter to hop over to a different service completely. Then again, maybe Blether could be acquired by Twitter. I don't know. Twitter's certainly done things like that in the past with services that they thought were cool. But I'm with you, Amber. I think this is a fad for now. It seems like we see services like this pop up because there is a bit of a demand, but unless they work seamlessly, I don't see the incentive.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head when you said if it looks like spam or looks like some weird conversation to other people, then it's just not going to work. You know, it's sort of messing with the natural kind of organic flow of Twitter right now. So maybe they'll make some changes, and we can, you know, it's not impossible that something that was a fad can turn into rad, right, Sarah?
Yes, very true. We can always revisit fads if they.
We sure can.
If they. You know, get a little facelift and suddenly become rad, we can absolutely revisit stuff like this. And if anyone is either using Blether or have a strong opinion about it one way or another, definitely let us know. Send us an email, send us a video, send us a voicemail, whatever. Or if you know any other services that are similar to Blether that maybe have been around longer even or are somehow better, let us know as well. So that is our rad or fad. It's fad for now, but we remain optimistic.
Awesome. Yep. It has potential, but it has potential. It has rad potential. Does that even make sense?
It does. Yeah. Potential for rad. All right, Amber. Well, I know that you are probably sick of sitting in a corner.
It's okay.
In, you know, Indian style. So we're at the end of our hour. The timing is good. Thanks so much to everybody who watched this episode of The Social Hour. Reminder, we are live on Mondays, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. A couple people in the chat room said that our twit schedule said that we started at noon, and I assume they meant noon Pacific. I'm very sorry about that. Might have something to do with changing over to standard time, because we've been 11 a.m. Pacific since day one. So
we sure
for anybody
have.
Who missed the show, it was a really good show. Watch it on demand. It'll be up later this afternoon. The audio will be up really soon, but the video will be up later this afternoon. All right, Amber. Well, as always,
Sarah.
Great to chat with you.
Good chatting, too. Lots to talk about this week, and we'll dive into maybe Google Pages a little bit more for next week's show.
Absolutely. Let's do it. We'll put it at the top of our list, and anything else that unrolls in the next week, and we know that things will. All right, Amber. Have a good rest of your conference in Toronto.
I will.
And
see you later.
See everybody.
Bye, everyone.